I want to talk to you about overt acts, motivators, and the dead. Although you will find the sequence I described to you invariable, the conditions resulting from it are quite complex. There are three circumstances. An individual has something done to him, and then he turns around and does it to somebody else or something else. And then he says, I shouldn't do that. So he holds himself from doing it again, and he brings the first time it happened to him and the time he did it close together. And they wind up in a ball, no matter whether they're 10 billion years apart or 10 minutes apart. They'll wind up. One is the motivator. The next is the overt act. The same, similar efforts. Person receives an effort, and he thinks he ought to be able to use any effort he has received. We get this sort of situation here. I showed you the dish and the tennis ball circumstance here. In comes this effort. Now, if it comes in and hits him, he makes a facsimile of it. He feels he should be able to put that facsimile into play at any time. And so one day, he starts to put this into play, and we finish the cycle, and gets there. He says, no. And when he says no there, he says no there. In other words, he stops the thing coming in and going out if he stops it going out. Why? Because when it was a counter effort, he stopped it and tried to stop it from coming in. So what does he use to stop it from going out? The same force that he used to keep it from going in. So this one, as it starts in here at the top, it's coming toward him. This is earlier on the track. This is the motivator. And this, of course, is antipathetic to his survival, being a heavy counter effort. And as it comes in, he says, no, 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 you must not come in. And he tries to force it to keep it from coming in, but it comes in anyhow. And he makes facsimiles of it coming in and his stopping it and his being unable to stop it. He makes a facsimile of every sequence of the entrance to him of this counter effort. Now, once upon a time, or a little bit later than upon a time, he will say that this is a similar situation. I'm going to do it to somebody else. I want to put this person in apathy, he'll say, and here's a facsimile of a good, strong counter-effort. I'll give them this good, strong counter-effort, and you'll start to give them this good, strong counter-effort, and you'll get a co-generation of energy there. And he'll say, all of a sudden, I don't want to put him into apathy, really. Because he is me and I am him, because here it's happening to him and it happened to me, so therefore I must be the same as him. And this is very simple and very sensible. You'll find all people who get motivators and try to use them as overt acts come to this conclusion that I am he, until they get a cross identification across the whole human race. They think everybody is them, and they pick up everybody's facsimiles, and they pick up all sorts of re-stimulation. They don't pick up anybody's facsimiles. That's a very special activity. You can grab somebody's facsimile, but you're not grabbing his facsimile at all. You're taking a photograph of his facsimile, or you're pushing him through his own facsimile. You're not taking his facsimile. It's the same difference. Now, therefore, people, when they have lots of motivators, which they've tried to use as overt acts, will eventually come to the conclusion that they and the rest of the human race are the same person. In other words, their own individuation is squashed. Why is it squashed? In comes the counter-effort. They stop the counter-effort coming in. They make a facsimile of it. They start to use it one day. They want to put somebody into apathy or put somebody out of action or nullify them. Something is happening. So they take this thing that happened to them and they say, here it goes, and start to use it, and they find the other person putting up the same resistance they put up, which identifies them with the other person because of an interchange of energy. There's an actual energy flow, and this other person says, no, no, no. The person who's doing it to them feels, no, 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 as an energy flow, not the words or anything. There's an actual energy kickback. And the second this kickback hits, it restimulates very mechanically the other side of this motivator. So it makes the person who is doing the overt act the same as the victim. It gives him a confusion of identity. And the second he gets this confusion of identity, he says, no, 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 I mustn't do this to me. And so he holds it up. And he tries to say, I didn't do it. And he tries to pull it back. He gets regret. Regret is the action of trying to make time run backwards. And so he holds it up. And here it was on the way out, but here's the facsimile now which is holding it up. Who's he? Is he the person who is holding it up or the person who is putting it out? Well, he must be both people. Well, if he's both people, then he can feel sympathy for the person he was doing it to. But of course, if he feels sympathy for the person he was doing it to, this makes him the same as the person he was doing it to, because anything you feel sympathy for, you identify with yourself. So it becomes an immediately unsolvable situation unless you have the reduction and erasure techniques of processing, Dianetic processing. If you have these techniques, you're going to resolve this. It couldn't be resolved before. So there we are. So you get the overact here becomes involved with the motivator there. The two of them lock together and make maybe. The person hangs up then on the time track. That's a standard situation. When you try to take apart a balled up time track, or a balled up situation, or a compulsive thought level, or inhibitive thought level, you'll find a motivator and an overt act, one way or the other, mixed up at the bottom of this thing. You'll find them interlocked. You start to run a pre-clear through one. You start to run him through this. You say, now we got a nice bop on the E-meter, and the E-meter says that he did this, and it was at such and such a date. You've gotten all this off the E-meter. You've asked it if it was so many years ago, and it was this and that, and you've got the complexion of this overt act. Who did he do it to? What did he do it to? And you start to run it. And so he goes through the action. By the way, it's very amusing to make people go through these overt acts sometimes, because as they start to go through them, they get just weak. They go into their own apathy level. If they're a severe overt act, let's say you're running an overt act of somebody choking somebody. You say, well, go ahead now, take your hands and choke somebody. And the fellow will start at the first moment of it. He'll say, well, yeah. He says, funny, my arms feel all limp. Well, the odd part of it is he's trying to force somebody into apathy if he's choking somebody. And so this person is actually exuding an apathy wave, because he's trying to force the person into apathy. He's saying, go into apathy, go into apathy. Don't act, don't move, be still. And as he does this, his intention matches the return wave. See how that is? I mean, he says, go into apathy. So the person goes into apathy, and then all of a sudden emanates the wavelength of apathy. Very simple. So the apathy wave hits the person who is doing it and makes him feel weak, because that's apathy. But the second he feels weak, he says, it must be happening to me. Because how did he feel when it was done to him in the motivator? Weak. In apathy. Now, he wanted the answer to this problem. Here's another being. I want to put this other being into apathy. How am I going to put this other being into apathy? I have a very sure method of doing so. I was put into apathy once by being choked. Therefore, the way to put this person into apathy is choke him. Simple solution. So he chokes him. His intention is to put the person into apathy. The person exudes apathy. Apathy comes back at him. He says, therefore, I must be in the motivator. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm in the overt. No, I must be in the motivator. And that's the way it acts in auditing. So you run it through once. You make this fellow choke somebody. Then he chokes him again. He's like, your hands around my throat. Well, there's something else complicates it. It's an actual fact that his hands closed around this person's throat. It made the cells, an area of this throat, actually exude an area of pain. And because they are the cells of the throat, they will mirror a wave into the cells of his throat. You know, the victim's throat starts to emanate pain. What's the most likely thing to pick it up? The identical cells in the overt act person's throat. That's a very, very mild little manifestation. That's tiny. That isn't big. The mechanics of it are the fact that he thinks, because he feels this slight impulse, he says, uh-oh, it's happening to me again. I am the victim. No, I'm not. I'm the person who's doing it. I'm the victim. No, I was the victim. No, he doesn't know, because he starts going down tone scale. Why doesn't he know? Because the bottom level of the motivator, when it happened to him, was, I don't know. So he just says, he just doesn't know what's happening. He gets very confused. You start to run him through, you make him choke this person's They use the Gong Ming go through the act of choking somebody, and he feels all weak, and he starts to choke somebody, and he goes on and starts to cut off their head with an axe or something, and says, "Oh, I don't want to do that. I wouldn't do that. And you make him go through it, and he said, all of a sudden, he says, "Well, gee, my neck, blood feels horrible. Got a smack." Well, now, you can go on forcing him to choke somebody, but you're actually, to some degree, defeating your own purpose. I ran some clinical experiments on this to find out if you could run over at axe through just by running over at axe through. And it's pretty hard to do. It will happen, but the person insists on running the motivator, running the time it happened to him. So the fastest way to do it, and the way to do it now, according to procedure, according to test, is run him choking somebody, and then you run him being choked. You run him being choked himself until such time as you find it getting very sticky indeed. You know, slows down, starts to be hard to audit. First moment it starts to get hard to audit, make him choke the other person. He starts choking the other person, and make him choke the other person until that gets a little bit hard to audit, and then get him choked himself. And you're reducing them selectively, each one to each one's level. And if you run one of these overt act motivator ball-ups on the track that way, you'll find out that you'll get a very speedy reduction. They're very fast to reduce then. So you don't have to work on it for hours and hours and hours. Now, if it's the real combination of the overt act and the motivator, which is really basic on this case, or which is at least one of those which is tending toward basic, you'll find the locks start flying off of this like mad. You just long chains of locks. And he'll keep trying to tell you, "Well, gee whiz, here's a horse and a carriage and so forth, and standing outside a brownstone residence, evidently in New York City, and this girl's putting a scarf around her neck and so forth." You say, "Go on, go on, go on. Choke this girl again." "Well, I didn't choke her, I put the scarf." "Now look, let's choke this girl back here, this cave girl. All right, let's choke the cave girl. Go on." So he said, "Well, all right." He starts in again. No, he says, it's this fight I had with Og. "Yeah, I know that now. That's getting more clear to me. Glug, glug, glug. Yes, I was getting choked by Og. And he's getting along fine, and he's running this, and gee, he's pleased." And the harder he bogs himself down, the more pleased he gets. Well, when he starts getting pleased with getting choked with Og, you know that he's justifying to you the fact that he choked her. So the second he starts to look even pleased or relieved or reduced in any way, he looks less agitated, get him right in there again, choking her. "Go on, choke her. Now bang her head against the rock. Go on, watch the blood fly. Now get her head against the rock. Now get your fingers in the throat. Now can you feel the fingers sink into the flesh? All right, can you feel any of the jugular vein or anything like that giving or caving in, the esophagus grating or anything like that? Oh, you feel her jaw breaking. Okay. All right, choke her some more." And the second he begins to be even faintly satisfied with choking her, you say, "All right, get the time Og choked you." You'll find he'd be a little reluctant. He'll say, "Well, it's running out here. So, in other words, don't let him feel relieved about either one of these things until they're gone. Just keep jockeying them, one or the other, one or the other. And that's how to run them. It happened to him. He made it happen to somebody else. Now, you'll go back on the track and you will find some interesting incidents. You'll find incidents of tremendous force. There's enormous force, electronic fields and everything else like on the track. It's really wonderful. It's, you know, people just sit around in insane asylums and say, "You know, I have this feeling that every time I try to lie down on the bed, I'm hit with these electronic fields, and I know that Western Union has some wires wired up to my brains, and they're reading my mind. I know they're reading my mind," and so forth. The psychiatrist said, "Well, give him another electric shock." The horrible part of it was the guy was running what is evidently an actual incident. He was psychotic. He got caught up in the overt act, maybe, and the motivator side. He got caught up in a motivator, and there he is being hit with one of these fields, and it was just as real as stamping on the floor. And believe me, it's real to him. And all a psychiatrist had to say to him is, "All right, let's get the time you shot the field at somebody else." I would say, "Oh, I never knew that." "Let's get the time you wanted somebody dead. He's a good patient, attractive to psychiatrists." He'll say, "You." Now, there should have been some real coordination toward the number of people who are being hit by electronic fields in insane asylums. And something that happened in reality on the track was somebody being hit by electric fields, coordinated with the dramatization of the psychiatrists of hitting people with electric fields. Somebody should have figured there was something there. It's something on the order of everybody driving down Main Street and there's a boulder 8 yards wide and 10 yards tall sitting in the middle of Main Street. Everybody keeps walking down Main Street and they can't get around this boulder except by walking out across the car tracks. They keep walking out across the car tracks and tripping on the cables and getting hit by automobiles and walking around the boulder and walking around the boulder. And the main reason they're walking around the boulder is to explain to everybody there's no boulder. All right. Because when you get a pre-clear into one of these electronic incidents, he'll go through the whole cycle of the tone scale. He'll have the most wonderful time. He'll feel invalidated, can't believe it, and he'll feel degraded. You want to know why criminals are criminals? It's because they've lost respect for themselves. How'd they lose respect for themselves? Because they get into an incident where they are degraded. How are they degraded? By being hit by too much force. Being invalidated, that's degraded. Okay. They become a criminal only when they've lost self-respect. Only when a man has lost self-respect will he indulge in criminal acts. So the best thing to do with criminals is buy them time and space, more time and more space, or put them in electric chairs so the next generation will have twice as bad a murderer on their hands. We've solved everything except sanity. We've solved everything in the field of the mind here in this country in the last many generations except sanity. Now, there are electronic fields back on the track, and when your pre-clear starts to run one of these things, you might, just for your own edification and perhaps amusement, watch him go into one of these electronic fields full tilt into an incident, which is a real good, solid incident. An incident such as I will describe later called the theta traps. Watch him go into the theta trap. The theta trap and the bodybuilder. Oh, brother. Now, don't give him any opportunity to run anything like an overt act. Oh, no. Make him run the incident just to find out how bad it can get. And it'll stick, and it'll be gooey, and he won't be able to get rid of it, and he will feel this way, and he will feel that way, and he will squirm, and he will twist, and somatics will turn on, and he'll run a tension unit flows coming at him, and a tension unit flows going away from him, and he will twist, and he will turn, and his reality will go to pieces, and his sight will doggone near turn off, and his teeth will feel like they're about ready to fall out, and his stomach will get all hollow, and he'll become afraid of death, and he won't be able to go to work the next morning, and he'll get sinusitis, and he'll get migraine headaches, and he'll get everything he's supposed to get, and it's just wonderful, because just keep on auditing him in the incident. Don't let him go over into anything else. Just audit him into the incident solidly, strongly, and keep him going through it. He will eventually hit apathy in it, and actually, I think it is possible for you to audit that incident all the way out. Probably, as the motivator only, not touching an overt act, it's probably possible for you to audit that incident all the way out. It'll probably only take you 1,000 hours. Anybody is liable to spend 1,000 hours. You want to know how bad it can get? Try one of those. Boy, you think of merely being hit by a streetcar, dumped into a concrete mixer, or stirred up by the teacher's paddle. Boy, these are nothing. That's just nothing. No incident has happened to any human being for hundreds of years which equal the magnitude of some of the incidents on the track that are real incidents, on the whole track incidents. There's nothing in this life. There isn't any person alive today who in this lifetime has had an incident sufficiently strong to be called a real first magnitude incident. I don't care what it was. I've tried to straighten out a long series of pre-clears, by the way, by auditing this life only, and I've gotten tremendous relief. I've gotten them up the tone scale, gotten them way above normal, but I haven't made them sane. They have manifested eidetic memory. They've done all sorts of weird and terrible things and so forth. But compared to how high a person can go, it isn't worth doing. Play all around all you want to with this life. It just isn't worth it for the amount of energy you put in on it. Besides, you can straighten up all the overt acts and maybes and everything else in this life. You should be able to straighten it up in a few hours. If you can't, you shouldn't call yourself an auditor. There's nothing much to it. Oh, they're mad at Pop or Mom or teacher or something of the sort, and they hit somebody over the head with a brick bat and somebody audited them. That's about all. Nothing. Go back on the track and find out where it's really rough. Now, it's no wonder that people say there is no such thing as a past life. No. Because a past life, way back, boy, are they solid in validation. Boy, they really put you down to the last tiniest spark there is, and that's being invalidated. So, of course, you can't believe in them. Furthermore, if you believed in a past life, you'd probably have to run one, and that's intolerable. Because people will even go on to this shabby solution called death to avoid the type of incident that can happen. But if you know about overt acts and motivators and deads, there isn't much stress to it. To get this fellow out of it, there really isn't a lot of stress to it. You audit one, you audit the other, and you audit the one, and you audit the other, and you audit the one, and you audit the other, and you audit the one, and you audit the other. Well, somebody's telling me they have a lot of trouble with Pack 1, taking about 3 months now, and they hadn't audited up Pack 1 yet. Well, I won't mention any names. Oh, they've been a bad girl. Way back someplace, they turned this gimmick loose on probably not one, but many. And that probably isn't even a overt act motivator situation. That's probably a dead situation, which I will describe to you in a moment. And this facsimile one, which could hang on for Lord knows how long, being audited itself as a motivator. Person saying, it happened to me. Please don't let me think it did anything but happen to me. Don't let me have done it to somebody else. No. It just happened to me. I'm the victim. I'm perfectly justified. This is what they're saying all the time. They're saying, it hurts my chest. Now I feel it in my left foot. Now I feel it in my right foot. Now I feel it in the back of my... Oh, the somatics are horrible. Just interpret those remarks into, yeah, boy, I sure need a lot of alibi because, God, if I ever found out that what I've done with this. You get the idea. You interpret that remark of, gee, this is a tough somatic. Oh, it's killing me, and so forth, right into that situation is, I need to be justified. You say, oh, gee, it won't audit out. It won't audit out means I did it. They're simultaneous conclusions. If it won't audit out, he did it. And that'll stand up and solve anything. So the fellow's got a migraine headache. So he's got a bad migraine headache. You can sit down, you can audit him out of a migraine headache. You can do it even with straight wire, get him out of a point where he won't ordinarily get migraine headaches. Or he'll stay pretty stable. So, well, you can do this. But if you really want to get rid of all the migraine headache there is on the case, you get the overt act motivator situation with regard to migraine headaches. And then don't let him run it as a motivator happening to him. But let him run it half and half, happening to the other person, happening to him. What did he do to give people migraine headaches? That's what you've got to solve. And then you've got to run the motivator of it, him getting the headache and the action of him doing it. Back and forth. I hope I've stated that forcefully enough, because there isn't anything could be stated forcefully enough about that. You can resolve cases best by finding the heaviest counter effort incidents on the track and find out when the pre-clear turned those into efforts. And you find that combination and track straighten out and whistles blow and bells ring and Sonic and Vizio turns on and he comes on up tone scale. And the two of them added out, audited out one after the other in combination, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, will relieve rather easily. Don't abuse yourself with that. If it's relieving hard, you're auditing one of them too much. Now, you will find yourself very, very prone. Very prone at first to say, this poor fellow, look what's happening to him. Yes, let's audit again, happening to him. You sadist. You're saying, I need justification for my overt acts too. Go ahead and audit the motivator. Now, it's a fact that you, as an auditor, can actually fight away from auditing out an overt act out of a preclear. But by doing so, you will put him through the tortures of Hades. There's no reason to do that. Theoretically, if you're auditing heavy incidents, see, you could get away with it in this life because there aren't any heavy incidents in this life. You could audit out all sorts of incidents, efforts, counter-efforts, so on. Do it well, bring your pre-clear along, cure somatics and everything else, very light. And you'll stay that way. But you have to put in too much time to do it. You can take off every possible lock, so forth. You'll have to put in order to do it, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. Why should you spend all this time on a case? It isn't whether you believe in a whole track or not believe in a whole track. It's why do you spend this much time on a case? That's all. If you audit the whole track and you audit with an E-meter, why, the case resolves. And it resolves on the basis of a very heavy overt act and a very heavy motivator. And you audit one against the other, and they're usually electronic incidents. And do not forget this one. Understanding has a great deal to do with the release of a heavy facsimile. Understanding what it is and where it is. But understanding is very difficult to achieve on an incident which has heavy force in it, because invalidation is there, disbelief is there, not know is there, just from the fact that it's a heavy facsimile. If it's a heavy facsimile, it is in the category of don't know, isn't, unreal, and so forth. Modern tone scale. It's a heavy facsimile, those factors are present. So they're present for both the overt act and both for the motivator. But they'll bang on an E-meter because the somatic is sitting there, the attention unit pattern is sitting there, the whole thing is right with the preclear. Now, you don't send the preclear back on the track to find these things, because the second you get the apathy in a motivator and the apathy in an overt act locked together, you get something that's timeless. And if a facsimile is capable of really bothering him, it's sitting right with him, right there. If you're real good at it, you can read it like a signboard wrapped around his head. He hasn't got this facsimile at some unimaginable distant point in the past. It occurred then, but because it has apathy in it to that degree, it's timeless, and therefore is capable of writing in present time. Now, you're going to find incidents where the individual starts saying, timeless. There's something in here about there is no time, or this is going to be in all time, or something of the sort, and there's a lot of phrases, there's a lot of words in this. No. That isn't in the incident. That's all there is to it. Is anything which is in apathy is timeless, and it gives him the sensation of it being timeless, and that's all there is to it. Nobody has to tell him. We're not interested in whether who told who anything. Because if you start to audit thought before you start to audit emotion, and you start audit emotion before you start to audit effort, in a heavy facsimile. Now, you take this balled-up facsimile, and you're going to audit the thought out of it, and then you're going to audit the emotion out of it, and then you're going to audit the effort out of it. Oh, you won't have pre-clear last that long. Because you're trying to do it in reverse and pick it upside down. And it's like trying to pick up a coal bucket, which is full of coal, but is upside down on the floor. And you just pick that coal bucket up by the bottom and you're in bad shape. You have to pick it up in such a way that you at least pick up the coal with it, and then you can empty it out. But it'll go all over the floor otherwise. All over the time track. And he won't know whether he's in Keokuk or Arslykus. He'll be in bad shape. So you should understand, then, that you are not even vaguely interested. Sometimes you get interested in the concept. The concept will come up and the person will say, this is a concept. Well, the reason you're not interested in the phrase is the heaviness of the facsimile will give him a concept. You see that manifested because out of the facsimile will come a concept sooner or later anyhow. Well, it's sitting right there with the concept. Concept is timelessness. And the fellow keeps trying to run this apathy, and he says, but it's timeless. It's just timeless. Like, it just goes on and on. Well, run the feeling of it being timeless. And by golly, he'll move right square in the middle of it to the point where he feels it's timeless, and he'll run that particular line, and he'll get off of it. So he can run the concept, but it's sort of a last resort. Don't run it on this basis. There is no time. I guess it's somebody here saying there is no time. All right, there is no time, there is no time. You will not feel there is no... You know, it's a funny thing, I'm getting worse. There is no time, there is no... Gee, I wonder what my head's hurting for, and so on and so on and so on. You start to run words, perceptics. When you start to run words, you're running perceptics. When you run concepts, you're running something that can be run. But don't try to run a perceptic out of an incident you haven't got the effort off of. Now, get that very clearly then, that you'll get every kind of a thought or concept imaginable out of these heavy efforts. And if it's sticky, if it won't art it out, you then know that he's done it to somebody else. And that applies to either a straight overt actor or a dead. Either one. If you find your preclears are not getting well rapidly, if they are not getting rid of incidents rapidly, get some auditing. Because it means that you are instinctively avoiding running some overt act that is probably going to be pretty obvious the second you look at it. So you test how you are about overt acts with the speed with which your preclear gets well. How fast does he run an incident? And it could be to some degree and is to some degree a psychic situation. But even more importantly, it's a tacit agreement situation. You say, I'm not going to audit that out of him because I need it as a justifier myself. Now, the dead situation could be called a justifier situation if it weren't for the fact that the motivator and a justifier would be synonyms then too. I'm going to tell you the difference between an overt act and a dead, a DED, a deserved action. You see that the maybe winds itself up by the person identifying himself with the victim and the emotional levels intertwining, the person defending, resisting, it's all tangled up. So you run one, you run the other. The maybe will spring apart, they'll go to their proper places on the track, and after it becomes un-maybe, the situation resolves and drops away with great speed. An incident, by the way, which is not involved in a maybe or is not surrounded by maybes, will blow with rapidity. If you find a preclear, by the way, whose locks don't blow easily, whose emotional secondaries don't blow at first glance, whose standard effort actions don't blow, don't release readily and rapidly, you know he's just got an awful lot of maybes on the bank and it's got him all glued up. Because those maybes are what are holding the rest of the locks together and so on. So you resolve, remember, maybes. And when you're auditing, as I have stressed so far, you are auditing maybes. And a maybe consists of motivators, and overt acts, or deads. And the pattern of it lies on the track that counter-effort precedes the thought and the emotion. Now, here, let's take a situation. Let's take a this life situation. Let's make it simple. Little girl's used to playing with dogs. Just out of pure cussedness, nothing else whatsoever, little girl is sitting on the kitchen floor, little dog comes up and says, sniff, sniff. And the little girl, having no great motivation for it at all, suddenly reaches out and bites the dog's nose hard. This dog has never done anything. This little girl. Nothing. The little girl just simply got the idea at that moment to bite the dog's nose and did so. Snap. This dog, by the way, doesn't go around snapping. Nothing like that. So he just got snap. The dog goes, yipe, 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 hi, 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 hi. And the little girl says, remorse. And little time goes on, and another dog comes along, and the little girl is sitting out in the yard, and the little girl looks at the dog and says, grr. And the dog goes, snap, and bites the little girl in the nose. Now, the odd part of it is that little girl is far more prone to carry that dog bite to her grave than she would otherwise. Because you say, oh, there I was sitting there and I didn't do a single thing to him, and he bit me. Now, how's this? This is a worse situation, by the way. Far worse, this situation is, than this situation. This is logical. And this is apparently illogical. This has a more ephemeral reason why it goes into a ball. A person doesn't think that out so easily. You hear little kids saying, he hit me, well, he hit me first. Well, if he hit me first, that makes it all right. Everybody goes on that basis. As a matter of fact, all law operates on that basis. Really? Did it to me first, so therefore I could do it. And you put that up as a defense, and the judge always says, dismissed. Now, in other words, here you have, that's logical. We all know that's logical. We have accepted it as a modus operandi in the society. But it's a modus operandi in the society because it's basically orderly. Fella gets kicked in the shins, he kicks somebody else in the shins. He really doesn't feel much remorse. Actually, this motivator overt act situation, unless it has very high effort magnitude on it, can go on and on without hurting anybody. Fellow's walking down the Rue de Paris one day, and somebody sticks him through the gullet with a rapier, and he pulls up in the gutter and bleeds to death, and so forth. And next life, why, he sees this fellow, and this fellow's dancing around pretty nice. And he pulls out a rapier and sticks him through the gullet. The guy falls down in the gutter and bleeds to death. So what? He walks down the street and sticks somebody else in the gullet. After a while, he'll get careful about the gullet. He'll begin to defend his own gullet, wherever the gullet is. It's an obscure medical term. He'll start defending that, and he won't like to hit people in the gullet anymore. He'll start repairing them through the abdomen or through the right eye or something like that. And he'll even get to the point, finally. You see, they start in, by the way, by using their teeth, and then they start using their fists, and then they start using a dagger, and then they start using a hammer, and then they get out here to a spear. Long. So you get further and further away from this guy. Actually, every time you hit somebody, you get an irradiation of pain from him. That's irradiated with vitamin D. They get an irradiation of pain from this guy. And so you want to be further and further away from him. Then you get to the point where you use a rifle, and then you get to the point where you use a long-range rifle, and then you get to the point where you are fighting with something like naval cannon at 16 miles, and then you get to the point where that's artillery of all kinds, and then you finally get up to such a cowardly, bogged-down, stupid, Navy-ridden society that you use atom bombs. You're mad at somebody clear across the world. See? That's the nearest to you can be mad at anybody. Everybody else you got to be an ARC with. Now, this situation is a very orderly progress. And actually, the overt act motivator situations, which you find in cases and resolve, are going to be rather unusual. You will find this, I say unusual, it will be, he's used to sticking guys through the abdomen with his rapier. This is all right. You stick them through the abdomen with a rapier and they die. Sometimes they nick you, you nick them, that's all right. Swords the same length, aren't they? And besides, so what? The orderly course of human affairs. And we figured it all out this way. And sure, every time you stick him in the guts with a rapier, you start getting stomach trouble and you have ulcers. But you keep on, it's all right. Now, something unusual will occur that'll ball up all of these fights. Like one day, you're busy fighting with this guy, and you start to stick him through the stomach, as usual, and he jumps aside, and the landlord's daughter's on the stairs, and you go right straight through her. Mistake! And you'll say, I didn't mean to pull it back, and in the process of regretting and not pulling it back, you get that mixed up with all sword fights. And you say, you make a solemn promise to yourself, I will not stick any more landlord's daughters through the abdomen. And actually, every time you see a woman slightly sick at her stomach after that, you get kind of sick at yours. And you have a feeling, a very sympathetic feeling toward girls with long flaxen hair. And you hate to see blood. You don't like women to wear too much lipstick. other reasons, see, that grow out of this thing. Well, that's a maybe situation. But this didn't ball up badly. Each one of these balled up a little bit until all of a sudden the overact itself became an indecision and a maybe. And that sort of acted retroactively forward and backwards because the guy tried to figure out, well, after all the women I ever knew stuck me through the stomach with a pier. Oh, man, they didn't. Won't figure. Now, there then is a plain situation compared to this one. This dead is this little girl. This little girl gets bitten in the nose by the dog, and she says, I didn't even. You know what she's done? She's tried to go backwards all the way in time to the time she bit the dog, because she flinched like the dog she bit flinched, which makes her the dog that she bit. And she doesn't like to be a dog that's bit, so therefore she says, I mustn't be a dog that's bit, so therefore it happened exclusively to me, you understand? It didn't happen to a dog, it happened to me. She's having a terrible, forceful time differentiating. She's saying, no, it was a dog that bit me. I am not a dog, because the other side of this situation, most horribly, is a dog. She's liable to start saying woof and so forth at any moment, and she lets herself go. Why? Because people who are bitten severely in the nose with teeth are dogs. That's her definition. She's delivered this counter-effort. And actually, it will squirrel her on the subject. And you run this, and you try to run this incident. You try to run this incident of her getting bitten in the nose. There she is, a sweet, innocent little girl. And she's sitting on the front lawn, and this nasty, dirty, filthy brute comes up and bites her. Without any provocation whatsoever. Of course, they took the dog out and shot him afterwards. And she said, well, he really deserved it. He really deserved it. He really deserved it. That would really make a rough incident. As a matter of fact, that would be quite aberrating in somebody's track. They took the dog out and shot the dog, because this means for biting the earlier dog, the preclear was the one who should have been shot. You see, it won't figure any way you look at it. This one, no figure. It just doesn't figure at all. So, all right, here's the dog being off and shot. She can't be the dog, because if she were this dog, she'd be shot. And if she were this dog over here, she'd be bitten. But she was bitten anyway, but she couldn't have been bitten. And besides, she's got to be justified. She's got to justify her existence to the degree. And she says, what she's saying is I never bit that dog. She doesn't even remember that she did. She says, I never bit that dog. I didn't bite that dog. I didn't bite that dog. And the way she says it is, eventually, when this piles up and gets the emotion on it, is I deserve to be bitten. It won't reduce either. You run this incident, it reads the same on the e-meter. So you run it five or six more times, it reads the same on the e-meter. And you run it five or six more times, it reads the same on the e-meter. You say, what's the matter with this preclear? There isn't anything matter with this preclear. But if an auditor knows about these techniques, there's something wrong with the auditor. He should have suspected the first time that he didn't get good action on this thing, that it was a dead. The person has to deserve it. He deserves it, so therefore he has to have it. I deserved it is the last ditch of this and the expression of it. I've got to have it. And although I offer it to you to be audited, I'm not going to let it reduce. Not me. On the one hand, it would get me shot, and on the other hand, it would make a dog out of me. So therefore, you just go to the devil, auditor. But I'll sit here all today, and I will run this as often as you want. And I'll even get tearful about it, and I'll get worse. I'll show you, that dog really did it to me. And probably he deserved everything he got, but I really deserved everything I got. I must have deserved it. But he didn't, this person didn't deserve it at all, it's obviously. Actually, it is a deserved action, and it is labeled correctly, not sarcastically. If she goes around biting dogs in the nerves of the nose, she certainly deserves to be bitten according to our standard laws here. So, it's a deserved action. She's got one waiting for her. It's a sleeper. She has one waiting. Bites the dog in the nose. Never gets bitten in the nose. Well, what do you know? But if she did,
She'd say, I really deserve that one. It's waiting. In other words, on the prior. And the person will keep these things because they are deserved. And they'll raise the most ruckus about having them. Oh, I suffer so. By the way, has any of you ever known a person who suffered so? Yeah. Sometimes I wonder a little bit about all of the suffering I see going on. But since I have come to find out about the dead, I don't wonder so much anymore. And I'm afraid I'm losing my sympathy button. I tried to keep it. It was valuable. Somebody comes up and says to me, so-and-so and so-and-so. I say, well, audit it. I mean, I won't sit there alongside the couch and say, go on, tell me more. I'll say, audit it out. Now, therefore, if you think you have found, if you are auditing a motivator in an overt act, and this is motivator is earlier than the overt act, you are auditing a situation which will resolve. You read it on an e-meter. And this is why an e-meter is very valuable in your hands, because you can ask for time box. When did this incident occur that happened to you? Well, the person will say, sure. Well, was it, what's the order of magnitude? Was it hundreds of years ago? No motion. Thousands? No motion. Tens of thousands? Little trigger. 20,000? Greater than 20,000? Little tiny bob. Less than 20,000? No bob. Gradually you narrow it down. Happened 22,000 years ago. All right, when's this other incident? Now you say, did you ever use this incident? Oh, no, zing. All right, when did you kill this baby? Or whatever it was that happened to them. I was a dear little baby and I was lying in my crib and nothing ever happened to me. Except one day, horribly enough, this big Saracen jumped on me and cut my throat. So forth. All right, let's go to the time to kill the baby.
Is it me?
Oh, no.
Not me.
No. No, I never killed any baby. Wrong, says the e-meter.
All right. Now, the motivator, the overt act, line up with motivator earlier than the overt act.
You audit this maybe. But you check on it. You check on it with this one. When you think you found the classical situation, you just check on it to this degree. Now you say, you've got the motivator, and it's 22,000 years ago, and you know where the overt act is. That's 10,000 years ago. So obviously the motivator's here, and the overt act is there, and everything is in beautiful order. Before you plunge into this, you be just a little bit more careful about it. You ask if there are earlier motivators. Did this ever happen to you earlier? And by George, you'll eventually, possibly, usually, find one. And you'll find that one. You'll ask for the earliest one each time. Remember how you used to do when you got somebody traveling on the time track? You ask for an earlier one? The earliest one. Every time you ask for the earliest one, he'd give you another one. And you keep on going back, because each one had to be spotted to reveal the one under it. And this will do the same thing. So you just keep moving back the time track. And he says, well, did this happen, ever happen to you any earlier than this? You ask for the earlier incident, not the earliest incident. Because it invalidates him to ask him for the earliest. The machine can't tell you any truth then. It's invalidated the second it popped. All right. Because it isn't the earliest. There's one under it, but it was the only one it could give you at the time. Back we go. You've got the earliest time it ever happened to the preclear. You've just got that. It's in the bag. Earliest time it ever happened to the preclear. Yeah, he's sure of this. Okay. Now, earlier than this, did you ever do it to anybody? You would be surprised how many times that needle goes zong. Otherwise, there you are, fighting like mad, trying to audit the classical situation when it is a dead situation. It's deserved, this motivator. You could call it deserved. There it is. And you will find out that only 8,622 times did he ride into the burning village and find little kids going down the streets, and he always thought it was fun to cut their legs or heads off or something with his sword as he went by. Fun. And this is why he's been pleading with you all the way up later than that to say, and there I was lying there, and they dropped me on the head. And there I was, minding my own business in my little crib, and mother... And there is why every AA on the bank is on the same track. They stabbed me. They did this to me. They did that to me. I'm in terrible shape. That sort of a situation, by the way, can more or less resolve out of this motivator overt act situation. But it's a cinch. when it comes out of this situation. You find out how many times earlier he did it without it ever having been done to him. And you will find very serious things. You're pretty clear who doesn't want to get well. That classic example, that statement, well, it's a statement made by the great minds that have been worrying about minds here on Earth, that nobody wanted to get well and people wanted to keep their aberrations. Take a look at that answer, because that's why. It's mechanical. It's a mechanical situation, completely mechanical. The person saw somebody do something to somebody and thought it was a good idea, or he simply thought it up himself and said, this is a swell way to put everybody into apathy. And they haven't done anything to him particularly. Everybody is enjoying life, and he was sitting in a... And he was... There are other things in his life that make him unhappy, maybe. There are other counter efforts, but not on this chain. Not on this chain at all. He's never been shot with any electronic devices. He's never been poisoned. This thing, whatever it is, has never happened to him. He hasn't any motivator on it. He's mean and ornery and cantankerous from completely other things. He's got a lot of motivators, but they aren't on this subject. And instead of dramatizing, this person does the incurable and horrible thing of thinking. He thinks. And he says, I got a big idea. An astounding and wonderful idea. I'm going to poison them all. So he starts dishing the arsenic into the grape juice. And he gets away with it for years. He just gets away with it for centuries. And pretty soon he's got this down as a pat technique. Well, you have a lot of trouble with the rulers of the city, so you invite them all in for a banquet, and they're all sitting down there at the banquet. You have the girls come in and fill their wine cups. They're your girls, so they come in and they fill their wine cups. Bop. Garbage truck. What a wonderful, graceful situation. Of course, each time it's getting a little bit worse. You're getting counter-emotion from these people, and it's piling up. It isn't too good, but the situations continue to have enough magnitude in them. They were about to plot against you and hang you, or you had to poison them or something. I mean, it's a situation that you justify one way or the other. Keep slipping the arsenic to them, slipping the arsenic to them. Eventually, you'll start searching around to find something that kills them quicker. You don't like that slow way they ride. You say you want something that goes, bop! You know, that's much better. So, now... One day, quite accidentally, in one life, your cook feeds you some slightly overdone fish, overaged fish, that gives you a very mild case of ptomaine poisoning. By golly, you just rave about that the rest of that life. For some reason or other, you just can't seem to get it out of your mind. And get the solution there. Little tiny dead sitting there. You knew you had it coming by that time. Boy, you'd really built the odds up. All the way up the track here. So sooner or later, I'm going to get it. And when you do, you say, I've had enough now. You see, it's affected me horribly, and I'm not to have any more, you understand? I'm awful sick. And I know that I've killed 8,622 people at one time or another in the last 8 million years with poison. But this dose of ptomaine is so painful. It is so terrible. It is so onerous. It has upset my life to such a degree. It has cost me such a fortune and all the rest of it that is enough payment. And there's no more equity here anyplace than this. This is equity. And a person tries to buy off with this little mild case of ptomaine poisoning for thousands of years sometimes. Every time anything else happens, he gets this mild case of ptomaine. Only it stops being ptomaine and becomes gas. And he starts reading Alka-Seltzer ads. And it devolves into something like that. You get the idea then. All right, now here's this fellow who is a squadron leader with some invader force. And they keep jumping onto these planets and swamping them up and having a good time with the babes. That's the way they'd express it, not the way I'd express it. Go on liberty is the way I'd express it. and having a good time. And they just keep this up and have a lot of fun. It doesn't occur to any of them for a long, long time that they're even vaguely like these other beings, that they haven't anything in common with these beings. After all, they're invader force. Look at their shiny holsters. And look at those beautiful helmets and those sleek ships. Look at those people. They live in wiki-ups and grass huts and along river banks, and they have powwows in weird temples along the marshes and worship snakes and so forth. And you walk in, and boy, are they stupid. You walk in and you say, the great god Ka will now spit at you and knock your head off. The priest tells you this. Well, you better stay back from all this. And you say, I have more power than your great god Ka. I can stand here 50 feet away from your great god Ka and strike from him his head. And the priest says, oh, yeah? So you just pull out your gun and you go bow, and the snake's head disappears, and the priest says, Allah, at last we greet you. And you say, well, now, let's get down to business here, bud. Where are the Vestal Virgins? This scene, by the way, might sound to you to be comedy or a space opera, but I'm afraid it's been enacted more times than any of us could count. Now, anyway, you have a good time. Life is rich and full of adventure and so forth, and you don't like the way they serve you pick up the tiniest little things that you call motivators. I mean, the beer is warm. You shoot the tavern keeper. You see, the beer being warm to you is the equivalent of losing his life to the tavern keeper. You see, he's that low on the tone scale, and you're that high according to you. And actually, the truth of the matter is, there is that disparity. But every time you shoot a tavern keeper, you come just a little bit more down the tone scale. Very silly. You didn't know Dianetics, so you didn't run these things out. And an auditor will be amazed sometimes at the light things that are called overt acts. I mean, motivators. He'll say, I'm just in horrible shape. This fellow will say, and you know, I had to be very careful of the kind of food I eat. Out in Hollywood, you find them by the ton. I had to be very careful of the food I eat. I had to eat special food and so forth. And I had to be very careful not to sleep in a draft. And I had to be very careful this way. I'm very sick. But the worst of it all is this pain I have in my ear. My mother used to grab me by the ear and pull me around. Let's find the numbers of times he bit the ears off of things before his mother did that.